Hi, and welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Renee Alberts, guest host of Prosody, and my guest is the poet, Dr. Tamika Cage Conley. Dr. Tamika Cage Conley is a literary artist who writes poetry, drama, and fiction. She completed her doctoral degree at Louisiana State University, where she received the Hewell Perkins Doctoral Fellowship and the Distinguished Dissertation Award for her manuscript, Painful Discourses, Borders, Regions, and Representations of Female Circumcision from Africa to America. In 2010, she received the August Wilson Center Fellowship in Literary Arts and a residency at the Vermont Studio Center. In 2011, she was awarded the Advancing the Black Arts Grant by the Pittsburgh Foundation and Heinz Endowments. In 2012, she became a Cave Canem Fellow. She was working on a novel and her first collection of poetry. Hi, Tamika.
Hi, Renee.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So you're reading some poems for us today.
Yes, I am.
Can you get us started?
Sure. Progeny for Bertha Rivers Mason. And when he putteth forth his own sheep, he goeth before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. And a stranger will they not follow, but will flee from him, for they know not the voice of strangers. John 10:4-5. 1. And what would you do? A know-nothing doctor declares your first grandbaby good as dead. She is just over a month old. Her mother breaks all over herself. You rebuke Satan and his fold. You fly your blessed hands covered in oil from Moortown to King's Highway, headlights against darkness, firelights your head. You pray in tongues. You sweat. You lift her cradled body from its otherwise tomb. You are blind to nurses, orderlies. With one look, you move them. A woman about business, you have come to wake the dead. 2. Your grandbaby's eyes are jaundiced, her breath narrow, her chest slim as a mouse, rises a fraction. A less holy woman would surrender, tell her children, try again. But you have your orders. God has sent this child. You prophesy to the heart. Beat. 3. In a land of sheep, your grandbaby is a shepherd. You call her name, and she hears the word live. She who can neither walk, nor crawl, nor know her dreams are dream, obeys. Beginnings. Don't come close. I am a woman with garlic in one hand, a blade in the other. I deftly peel away the skins, frail and fragile as a moth's wing. I clutch the bulb the way I hold my man after 9 p.m. Steady. I don't lose a thing but concentration. The worlds I build with food, I tear down with words. I am writing a novel set in Shreveport, though I cook more than I write. No wonder my curves are more curved, my flesh lissome as puffed silk. I bemoan the garlic skin that falls and flutters like an eyelash. Sometimes I want what is useless. Nevertheless, I am a woman about fixing things. The sauce, the chicken, the pies. I am peeling the second clove, blasting Patti LaBelle's If Only You Knew. My blade catches her yearning. I balance it on my tongue. What words have I forsaken? How many servings will it yield? On my table, there is folic acid for the child I carry, tight in my abdomen, bulb within a bulb. In my mouth, I own the smell of garlic, earthy, pungent. I beg for words to hold. The world is a garlic clove. I peel, I receive, I season, I cook, I love. All is filled. When is there enough to give? Writer, housewife, chef in this house. A note from Pecola. Trouble is, I want too much sense out of life. The midnight blue coat should keep me warm and dry, more beautiful than a blue eye worn weary by age and sought after. I feel ashamed in the light of unknowing, dark spot in a dark world, consumed. Protection is the force that hides malice in the hands of the wrong man, Father. Blackberries have only one place to grow, in weeds, on vines, wrapped around my head, juice purple as me. My skin is the only translucent skin I know. No shedding can hold it, neither does skinning, nor a father doing secret on me. I wander. Mouths move to frame me, tender-minded, suicidal, touched. None of this suits my fashion. I hold delicious better than holy. I know contemplation on the edge, the shape of foul. You go through hell, come back resurrected. I'd say it to you, but you too busy looking at me shine.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Renee Alberts, and my guest is the poet Tamika Cage Conley. So I think from that ending line, that too busy watching me shine, gets to one of the things that I want to talk to you about in your work, which is this the strength of the voice. I feel like it's at once very intimate and very assured, like you are just sort of swept into these poems and swept into this speaker's worldview. And I think that part of it comes from these great statements that automatically include the reader, like, and what would you do? And don't come close. And that phenomenal final line of the last one that you read. But then you also have these moments that are really these like lovely elevated moments of language, like I hold delicious better than holy, and I feel ashamed in the light of unknowing. And so I guess, can you talk about that, like how you work those things together and how you establish that speaker's voice?
Sure. I think I've always really been interested in conversation and dialogue, how people engage each other, what they say, what they don't say, mm-hmm. what people think within themselves, the conversations that they have in their own minds that they're too ashamed or afraid to confess. And so I think that what makes confession so powerful for a poet is when you get to the heart of truth that is intimate and raw and vulnerable. And then you kind of create this strength for me, I think, by surprising and really demonstrating strength where it might seem there isn't any. So how does a character like Pecola, for example, find light? You know, it has to come in some place that only a tender sort of power can know. And that's her own self, her own thinking about who she is, for example.
So you come to it from the perspective of, like, the character of the poem. So how does that work in the writing for you? Like, how you make the decisions of when to get to those moments of strength, or how to craft them?
I think so much of it becomes about what's working best for the poem. And that really comes through the editing, honestly, mm-hmm. because I can't say that I always know exactly what to do. That question you brought up, and what would you do? Mm-hmm. That was really a way to immediately grasp the reader, but it wasn't in the first draft. It was, you know, second, third draft, where I thought, how can I really grip someone who is reading or hearing this from this very first phrase? Because I wanted to capture the panic in my family, and I felt that asking that pointed question would do that.
Yeah, I think it did. And I was, when you began the show like that, I thought, I mean, I was immediately pulled in. I was like, oh. But I think that some of what you're saying touches on another thing that I'm curious about, which is this real sense of power. And it seems specifically like women's power and African-American women's power that comes up a lot, and spirituality and how that's tied to power in your work.
You know, it's amazing because that part of my work was really crystallized at the Kaveh Khanum retreat this year. I had someone in my workshop group say, every poem you're writing is woman-centered, and you have all this matriarchy, creativity, and experience within you, and I think that's what you should be writing about. Now, I had been writing about that, but I needed someone to say, this is what I see, this is what has not really been done. I mean, other writers have done it, but I think that he just saw something unique in the way I was doing it. And as a poet, that just means the world to know that you're doing something that can have impact and meaning. And, you know, that's just also in praise to the people who raised me. You know, that's really just coming back to my family and to my community and all the way back to Louisiana, where my life started and where I first wrote in the first place.
Yeah, Louisiana comes up a lot in these poems.
You know, that's so interesting. I moved, you know, across the country. You know, it'll take 22 hours to drive there, but it's still so much a part of who I am, even though growing up, I wanted to be so far away from there. I mean, I knew from the time I was 4 or 5 years old that was not going to be a place I was going to remain. Mm. But as a writer, it's my home. It's in me so deeply, I can't pull away from it. The novel I'm writing is set in Shreveport because it's the best place I know. You know, it's a place I would never want to live again, but it is the best place I know. So anything I write would have to really start there.
What do you mean it's the best place you know, but you would never want to live there?
I understand the culture there. I understand the people there, or at least what my perceptions of them were for the 18 years I lived there before going to college. And it's the place that I feel most comfortable in terms of dialogue, dialect, culture, and really my roots are there. I wouldn't want to live there because just aesthetically and culturally, it no longer really speaks to this person I've become since I left. But it is the best place I know for setting and for place and for creating a kind of magical world, because that's what I had to do to survive living there.
That reminds me a little bit of the tension between those kinds of lines that we were talking about before, with like the very direct, like almost conversational, like what would you do? And the, like, you know, I hold delicious better than holy, that sort of balance. Okay, can you read us some more poems?
Sure, I would love to. The poem I read previously was entitled A Note from Pakola. And the next two poems are basically part of that same series of poems that were inspired by characters from Toni Morrison's novels. Holy Baby Suggs for Yona. Give me this scrap of shining. Leave me alone to contemplate daffodils, the living, the dying, the way the yellows change from bright to gray. The people come for me, and all I see is brown, blue, purple, green, blood red. 1,000 rainy rainbows hover close to my bed, all kinds of eyes beating down on me. Ghost, I have given up. Give me something to ponder. I'll take anything but white and that blood red. Give me some silver to suffer on. A little gold. Make my tea a whole mess of black. Nothing can stop this moving, my tongue turning over itself, calling on color, be calling on God. Touch, post-slavery. Ain't love hard? Toni Morrison from Song of Solomon. The sugar bowl is not for pretty on the kitchen table. It is another galaxy made of stone and breath, a wish between continents, its sweetness a fist to pound against darkness. The hands that formed it belong to a face, dust brown on an island where my great-great-great-grandmother was born, where she died, where she worked to make sugar, back bent, aching knees, mouth twisted into lack and longing, throat scorched by sun and thirst, mind spent dizzy with worry-weary bones that tell time. My world stretches to her world. We sing our trouble down. Say love is hard like life in unison. Every time I sip the sweet heat, she mouths from her starry post-life, that's me, that's me. Catfish. Papa brings a chill after the wood door closes. He holds two paper bags full of catfish wrapped in newspaper. The weather report for Shreveport nearly washed out by the damp fish, plump bellied, their narrow faces shimmering in death. We are hungry. We are ready to consume. Who will clean the fish, I ask, though I already know the answer. Nana will do it. She does so many things too well, the work of her hands, quick and brutal. How she scrapes the pearlized scales that fly like a frisbee. One pops me in the eye. I laugh at its hardness, like plastic, like a cut fingernail, like family. Its pain is inferior to its beauty. When Nana is not looking, I touch the eye of the fish. It jiggles beneath my finger and sparkles like a jewel. Nana's butcher's knife slices the belly of the fish. With one clean slit, the flesh breaks, then the tough outer skin. It sounds like metal. Touching the eye has made me kin to this body we will eat. What did the fish believe as it breathed its last? Was it ready? Nana asked me to take the cornmeal, lard, and lorries from the cabinet, stained yellow from cooking and cigarette smoke. This request says she forgives me for some unnameable thing I did the night before. What? I don't remember. I could have looked wrong or rolled my eyes. I could have said the word lie, a profanity in this house. Perhaps I swept the top of her foot, shiny with Vaseline, a costly accident, something to beware of, a tale passed down from enslaved African mothers. I make a salad of iceberg, tomato, and cucumber. She nods approval to the dish. I know this ritual. When it is time to eat, we pray. After fights, we eat. Every shut eye ain't sleep, so the saying goes. Every shut eye ain't dead is another saying. Ask the fish, born without eyelids. Eyes open, eyes closed, there is no choice. When your body is necessary for a girl and her great-grandmother to say, I love you, you learn the pulse of sacrifice, what it needs, the hunger it kills.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Renee Alberts, and my guest is the poet Tamika Cage Conley. So you mentioned that you write your poems in the voice of characters, and your poems also work with narrative. And can you talk about how you approach that, the decision to write in a character's voice, and also maybe separately, how you weave narrative into a poem?
Well, sometimes I write a poem and I have to ask who's speaking. For example, the poem I'd read, A Note from Pecola, I wrote that poem and I realized that that was some entity, some character, some person that wanted to say something. And I had to get really still and quiet and say, who is this? And then I realized it was Pecola. It was my interpretation, my understanding of Pecola and the way I imagine her. And once I knew that, I could really put the finishing touches on the poem and be really direct and clear with that voice. In terms of the decision of narrative, I've always liked to talk and I've always loved telling stories. And I find that the best stories are the ones that are the most clear and make the most sense and are the most believable. And to really find the emotional pulse of the poem, something I learned from the great poet Terrence Hayes, is really a strength that can really be, I think, energized when you are really aware of truth-telling and intimacy.
Can you read us some more poems?
Sure. This is a blues poem that I wrote at Cafe Conum. Body out of nowhere. You got to die to leave me, Nancy. What did my eyes see? You got to die to leave me. Should've let that broke nigga be. Take off running in that field, baby. I'm gonna count to 10. This here 38 got some majesty to send. Jesus, don't the moon turn black? Turn black sometimes. Into the flying night, don't cry, don't scream, don't moan. No, what good it gonna do? You cut my heart, the beat turns slow. Sawing you a whole split world for me and you to mend. Slipped my mind up in you. Your tongue said husband, said friend. Sweet Jesus, don't the moon turn black all the time. I showed you my hands where work made me hard. Your lips soft on my fingers, my mouth called the Lord. Saw his hand slip up, slip up, slip up, slip up, where only mine's supposed to be. You a stone cold lie woman, then brewed rage in me. Jesus know how the moon turned black, how it turned black in the nighttime. Here lies Nancy Lee Washington Young, is what the gravestone will say. She cheated, tested her husband, and ain't alive this day. Jesus, don't the moon turn black sometimes? Jesus, don't the moon turn black sometimes. Cortez, for Britannica. Looks like car/ties, not Cortez, which is what your mother meant, but chose not to spell. When alone, she named you. Last name Durham, middle name's Bernard Aries, nickname Buckeye for your bucked eyes, round and glorious. They saw you into your future, celebrated with gunshots and American flags. Born January 10th, 1977, Bossier City, Louisiana. Capricorn, second to the oldest of five, two girls and three boys. Raised in the projects, you broke out. talked white folks said, but when you called on Friday nights after tackles and touchdowns, glory hung around your voice when you said, Tamika, like a sweet. Believed yourself to be ugly back then. Did you learn the lie of that? Decorated your body in Greek letters and fatigues to stand out, to hide. Died a captain November 8th, 2007 in Friuli, Venezia, Giulia, Italy. When the Black Hawk that carried you like a bad mother spent out of control and broke into 1 million pieces of metal and empty mechanical scraps, it ripped you and your gear, you and your gun, you and your helmet, you and your skin, you and your pink and red and taupe and purple and black organs, you and your breath, you and your seed, all to shreds. After the light kissed all the broken pieces, you, a psychedelic tapestry of human, of man. Did you see you fly again, skyward? Just then, a chill wrapped around your mother, who could have been our mother, if, in a breath, she went insane, Cortez. You always wanted to rule, to take flight. Cortez, superstar back then, master of the thing black girls wanted to groove beneath. The names of your first loves burn next to mine. Who can remember running through water sprinklers with you during the muggy nights of July? Just one night, Cortez, wanted to love every woman, your body a 6-foot mass of honeyed whispers. Sullied hisses, role model, heartbreaker, soldier, beloved, beautiful brown Buckeye, tell me the names of God. Commandment, after Fred Moten. So you don't just walk on me. You slide behind to do the right thing on me. You bless me. You see past the chill of me to come and lay warm beside me. Look above the fiery mountain of me to the keepsake in me. Chase away the blues on me to shake the gospel down in me. Tell me stories of trees and hills, family rotted in me. Know the past ghost of me to raise the dead of me. Put a hand on me. I found some history tattooed on me by a family that was lost on me. Got Holy Ghost in me. Don't go too fast on me. Strain your body all up and around on me. Push and pull on me. Wash the last cup of me.
The poetry of Tamika Cage Conley. Thank you so much for being here,
Tamika. Thank you for inviting me, Renee. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a bi-weekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the arts entertainment news weekly published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in at our new time, Saturday mornings at 6:30, for Prosody 90.5 FM.